Yeah, I'm really glad to have you here to talk to me. I've seen your movie at the Comunales Kino some weeks ago. It was sold out.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and as I wrote, I'm working for this radio staff Südnordfunk here at Radio Dreieckland in cooperation with the IZ3W. I don't know if you know this.
No.
It's a paper, kind of paper for Global South political topics.
Okay.
Since more than 50 years, so they're really...
I'll check it out.
German-wide.
Oh.
German-wide paper.
So it's written in German?
Yes, it's written in German. It's for the German...
Public.
to
or German
to
reader.
Get in touch or to get in a much deeper touch with topics from over there. Mm. So not only superficial news from the newspaper, but really, really analyzes it. So and with a really critical and left point of view, I would say. As well as our radio station, it's really, really left. And, you know. Yes. And I want to talk with you about, of course, about your movie or the topics of the movie. And as well about maybe the presence and the future of feminism in Ghana. And I'm not sure if you are in contact with the younger people, but we will talk about this in the end. And at the beginning, yeah, just if you want, you can introduce yourself with some sentences. So what are you doing in your life?
Okay.
You can make it short.
Sure. So... my name is Asei Tamaklo, and I'm a filmmaker, I'm a film educator, I run a women's film festival in Accra, Ghana, and I'm a PhD candidate, and above all, an activist. So that's me, and my work in film has spanned almost two decades. And for the Women's Festival I run, it started in 2017. And I started the festival, a women's film festival in Accra, because worldwide we know that when it comes to film, even though women have worked so long in film, access to spaces to be noticed and their work viewed, and also as a space for advocacy, there is, but there still aren't many. So I thought that, why not? And of course, in my country, there is none. And also in West Africa, I know that there's one from Senegal, but I don't know if there are others. I haven't found out yet. And yeah, so I believe in women's rights as human rights. Yeah.
Okay, and now you spent several months here in Freiburg, surrounding of Arnold Bergstresser Institute here, and you did your research here. You worked with students together with students. So, what exactly was your research about here in Freiburg?
So I didn't work with students. I was at the center, Africa Center for Transracial Studies, connected to the RBI. And I'm here on an Erasmus Fellowship connected to my PhD studies. And my PhD is in African Studies, but it's in African Urban Studies. And my entry to the study is using film. So I'm looking at urbanism in my country, Ghana, but using cinema to make my study, you know, on the ground that for a long time, the scholarship, especially from the global north on African urbanities, has been more just about city literature, and also that the urban and the rural are treated separately. But I'm trying to say that there's a connect, and the spaces are blurred, and as time goes on, there's a lot more fusion. They feed off each other, and so that's the work I'm trying to do. And so being at the ACT was to make me engage with the scholars at the ACT, present my work, get feedback. Other people present their works. I also get feedback, and then also screen my films both at Koki and at the Accra, you know, and also attend some conferences. And I also audited a course at the University of Basel called African Method Theory. And it's for PhD and master students in history, anthropology, and urban studies. And because I'm doing urban studies, it was useful to me. And this course was largely crafted to give students the chance to experience alternative knowledge production when it comes to African studies, or to say different ways of reading and doing African studies, like the ones we normally know, where most studies in Africa or on African studies is fueled with periodization, pre-colonial, you know, but what other ways in which we could study the continent, you know, and what other means. So some of the scholars who came talked about using humor. Some people talked about using biographies. There was one of the best experiences I had when one of the visiting scholars from Howard had just written a book on 18th century Lagos and using maps to read the city of Lagos, you know, maps, creeks, waters, etc. And those things don't exist today, but she's been able to, you know, find them. And yeah, so that was what I've been doing since I was in Freiburg.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. In your film, When Women Speak, is about the feminist movement since 1957, from independence from Great Britain until the millennium, more or
yes,
less?
Yes, actually pre-independence. So the movements started even before the independence of Ghana. And so the film
captures... So that would be my question. When was the first feminist movement in Ghana?
Okay, so we call it more largely the women's movement, you know. But we've had... Before our independence, we have had different movements. We have had the Ghana Women's League. We have had the Ghana Women's Assembly. And by the time independence was happening, there was a merger, you know. So even, I think, in the 50s, early 50s, I think the Ghana Women's Assembly, I think, had already started, you know, meetings. And then by the time independence was coming, ordinary women, market women, you know, different kinds of women were organized. And the CPP's, our first party that won the election, the Convention People's Party, actually is said to have come to power through a lot of work from the women who were part of the party, you know. And so early women movements were interested in the politics of the country. They later moved into welfare, human rights, etc. later, but in the beginning, it was more working towards getting a freedom or nationalization. Yeah.
Hmm. So you mentioned some of the players. I don't know if there are any more players of this movement. And the second question would be: What were the main topics, the main issues nowadays?
At the time, like I said, it was more about, first of all, it was pre-colonial, so there was the women's way, the topics were more about organizing for independence. Then it moved into women being interested in other national affairs. But even underneath that, because the people like Dr. Evelyn Amatefiu and others, when they put up their women's movements, it was not just about independence. It was more about also women's own protection. Because when you watch our film, when we're talking about inheritance and the interstate succession law, you get to find out that women since the 50s had been agitating about a law that would protect women when their husbands die, interstate, things like that. So, I mean, a lot of things were being done in the background, but what was most popular was women being vocal and organizing more for independence, yeah. And also, I also realized that, I mean, the archives, when we were looking for material for the documentary, we also found out that women were also organizing when it came to work, you know, different forms of work, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wrote down some keywords like education, widow's rights is an important thing.
So widow's rights came later.
Okay.
Education was in the forefront after independence, you know. So people like the very first pro vice chancellor of woman pro vice chancellor of the University of Ghana, Professor Florence Dolphine and co. I remember her saying that when she came from she in 65, when she had done her PhD and was back in Ghana, they had started an organization that was interested in women's education, girls' education actually. So interested in, you know, helping girls as to charting career paths after high school and things like that. Then much later, after the coup, there was a shift from women being in very interested in mainstream politics to welfare. In the 70s, widowhood rights were, you know, one of the things that were talked about. There's the inheritance, the family law, interstate succession,
mm-hmm.
you know. Of course, much later, there were conversations about sexual reproductive rights, you know. Yeah, but education was on the top of the list. Much later, as time went on, also was economic justice and freedom, you know, social justice, etc. So, yeah, it built on over time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you know if there were differences to other African countries in the women's movements? Or, yeah, could you compare it at all?
No, I can't compare. No. I didn't study. I didn't go looking for what other African countries were doing. But I knew also that Ghana was charting the path, because when it came to Africa, we were the first to have independence. You know, so there were lots of things that the other countries were learning from us. When I made the film, I found out that the Federation of Women Lawyers, which was an international organization, also had other chapters in some other African countries. But also, the African women's movement across the continent, I mean, I think that when it came to the making of nations, where most nations were trying to get independence, women got involved. So most of the movements also started from such places, from the grassroots, also to the women who were already in these political parties. And that's how different kinds of activism emerge. Because if we're using our film as a template, you find out that there were different strands of activism that you see. You see law, you see, you know, education, you saw social justice, you saw economic justice that was linked with mining and things like that, you know, etc. So there are different strands, and also the activism where women are able to take part in public life, trying to use affirmative action, you know, things like that, being in politics, giving representations in government, etc. And I think it's been a fight all throughout. Over the years, we realized that Rwanda did a better job when it came to women's representation in government and in the parliament than, you know, others. For us, even though we started when it came to governance, there was some stall, you know. And recently, last year in July, the Affirmative Action Bill got passed, and so work is starting on, you know, proper. And I use the word proper because now there has to be an intentionality about percentages of women represented in government, in governance, you know, in public office, etc. Yeah.
Hmm. What's your opinion? Would you say that there is a kind of colonial view on feminist or women's movement in Africa from Europe? Do you feel something like this?
There's always been one issue or the other. So, you know, I think it is an open secret that the women's movement across the world is in different phases. Sometimes what the global north, the feminists of the global north want is not what the feminists of the global south want. You know, their ideologies sometimes vary. Even though the most basic understanding is women's rights are human rights, because across the world we see that problem, that women's rights across the world is not considered human rights. That is that. But there are segments and different things that each continent, or, you know, if we do the divide, their immediate needs are different from, you know. And yes, people have felt and thought and actually written and made it look like African women did not know feminism until they encountered Western partners, but which is not true, because women have always been part of whatever revolution, whichever form, whether local, whatever, they've always been there. And so being aware of things around you, you do not need another person to open your eyes, you know. So one of the reasons why we made our film was to debunk the narrative, debunk, contest, and also show that women's activism when it comes to Africa and especially Ghana has always existed before any European and sort of influence, and also to let people also on the continent know that women have always been activists, and this is not a concept copied from the West. Because whenever people talk of feminism, the first phase of feminism is Western feminism, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, 1968 and so on.
And the 70s, mm-hmm. the second wave and all of that, you know. But really, if you look at our film, that's the 50s, yes, and, you know. Yeah. And even one of the women in our film who had passed, was already dead, but it was in our film, our first former High Court judge at the time was already working with the UN, writing the charter for the CEDAW and others, you know, the charter for the elimination of discrimination, of all forms of discrimination against women. And so I think a couple of years ago in Geneva, a street was named after her. And she was doing this work already how many years back, you know. But sometimes it's also because we do not have the information, and the narrative is not there. And we also know worldwide that even in European countries or Western countries, women's histories are hushed, are muted. So you can imagine what happens in other continents. There's an intentional effort to write women out of history. So because if it wasn't that, we would have found out that women have been doing the work all these years. But you keep thinking that we are discovering, whilst it should be the other way around. Yeah.
Okay, now let's come to presence, maybe. My first question is, so I guess there is still a feminist movement,
of course,
nowadays. So what are the current issues of this movement? So do they differ from the past?
So the things, and I don't know whether you know this, but you know, when it comes to activism, there's always a back and forth. You know, you can take 10 steps forward and then you come back 20 steps because something changed in the middle somewhere again. So education is still there, you know. But of course, we have chalked a lot of success in education. There are a lot more girls in school than before. Actually, girls are almost outnumbering boys in school now. So there has, you know, been, when it comes to law and inheritance in my country, the in the constitution there are different laws that work with it. You know, it's under the family law, but you know, have the interstate succession law, etc., that does give women some leverage when it comes to when their husbands die in interstate, or even they themselves, their own properties, etc., you know. But also one thing that is largely on the table is economic freedom and economic justice, because we have come to also realize that poverty is linked with women, you know, across the world, but especially also on the continent. And so most of the feminist movements are also working hard to, you know, find the balance where women would have equal rights to certain things, you know, be able to make their own money, be able to have their own businesses, even though they do, because even from back in the day, women have, you know, had their own businesses and spaces, but to institutionalize these things, you know, so that if I needed a loan from a bank, it would not be as difficult as once upon a time, but also for me to also understand my place in commerce, you know, in the world. And then also basic rights, because as you and I both know now, looking at the governance that is happening across the world and the extreme positions governments are taking, there's a certain retrogression that is happening from all the wins that and gains that we have made. And all of that is back on the table, you know, basic human rights, abuse, you know, etc. So we're still back at the table. But the women may not be marching every day like before, but a lot of work is happening. And these days, too, people are also very concerned about domestic violence, you know, because now that we have access to information than before, people are finding out that there's a lot of work to be done in that area, you know, so that is also on the table.
Mm.
Yeah.
But how do young people work? So they don't go on streets that much anymore, or it's only in the internet? Or?
There's work happening on the internet and also on the streets. Recently in my country, there was a demonstration against illegal mining because it was destroying our water bodies, you know, or it is destroying our water bodies. And there were many young women who were part of that demonstration. There's a way in which older women organized. That is not exactly what is happening today, but it doesn't mean that activism has died, you know. The processes may be looking different. But also, there are still organizations that are actually working for women. So when you go to Ghana, you have the Network for Women's Rights, NetRight is there. You know, you have the Forum for African Women Educationalists that is there, and you have FIDA. So and when you take FIDA like this, which is for the lawyers, what happens is that when young women graduate from law school, they automatically are filled in, and it's pro bono work, and you do it for some time, you know. So all of that is still happening. Maybe some of these things are not on the internet. People are working, so maybe nobody has time to be, you know, putting it up on the internet, but work is happening. And also, I think that the struggle is becoming different, you know. The fight is taking different turns. In the past, it was about a lot of marches, a lot of petitions, a lot of this, a lot of that. But these days, people are finding different avenues. But also, to be fair, a lot of work has happened in the past for which younger women are standing on today. There's a lot of freedom we have today that would have been impossible if the older women hadn't done the work. So, yes, so we are not shouting and screaming like before, like our mothers and our grandmothers and our great-grandmothers did, because majority of the work had also been done. But, of course, there's still the continuation, and that is where we are taking it from, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about sexual consent, queer rights, pay gap? Are these topics?
Yeah,
discuss about nowadays more than.
You find these conversations happening more on Twitter spaces. Mm. So I've seen in recent time a lot of young women organize events like this on Twitter, where people are talking sexuality, sexual freedom, choices, you know, pay gaps, so you're seeing it more on the internet than in real life, you know. For the pay gap, it's here and there, because sometimes if you don't have the information that your male counterpart is getting this much, you're not even able to agitate because you think you're comfortable, you know. So there's that as well. But when it comes to a lot of young people these days are using art as well. So the performing arts, the fine arts, literature, music, to also do their own form of activism. So you find that most young people are into different creative hubs. And sometimes when you go to see what they are doing, indirectly they are performing different kinds of activism, you know, but using their different art spaces. So you find queer people do their art, have their gatherings, you know, and then you, etc., etc. So I think art is also becoming one of the sources, and the different kinds of art, I'm saying, are also becoming one of the spaces in which younger people think that they will thrive better in activism.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in Germany, the Gen Z calls itself queer feminists, you know, they bring queerness and feminism together. I don't know if it's the same thing in Ghana. And for me, it's almost like a new sexual revolution, what's happening here. So with all the possibilities in sexuality, identities, new identities. So that's at the same time, it's a conflict with the older generation, and it's a conflict inside feminism. Do we have the same things in Ghana?
It's a yes and no. And I've not heard of queer feminism in Ghana, but I also know that it's just that the name is escaping me, but I recently found out there's also a group of young people who have their own ideologies about sexuality and being feminist and what they want to do. Yes, there is some, I don't want to call it conflict, but some young people also think that they are about to reinvent the wheel, you know, that their feminism is better than the feminism of yesterday. I think it's a world problem. It's unfortunate, though, because young women won't be standing to even be able to say that their feminism is superior to older feminism if the older feminists have not done the work, because the world used to be messier than today. I mean, today there's a lot of mess, but there's been a whole journey of trying to create space for women. So I think most importantly, we are supposed to be riding on the shoulders and continuing that rather than trying to fight. But also, it also comes with, I think, coming of age. When people are coming of age, they think they know everything, and they think that they are saying something that has never been said before. And then when they hit 50 and 60, they realize that everything they were saying at 30, 20, and 18 had been said by another group at that same space. So it's just a funny cycle, I think. But I hope that we are able to bring everybody into the loop, you know, of feminism. I also think that there's a certain fatigue that has set in across the world as well, because a lot of fighting has happened and people are quite exhausted. And also that a lot of fighting has happened, but things are turning around in a certain way, and people are a bit heartbroken and disillusioned as well. And so it's just too much that's happening. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And so, yeah.
Yeah, me, I'm in the middle of the 40s, and I can understand both sides.
Yeah.
So, and I think both sides could learn from each other.
Yeah.
So, are you the same opinion? And what exactly do you think the younger could learn from the older, and vice versa?
One of the reasons why we made the film was to create this opportunity for younger people to learn. I think that we have to meet in the middle, you know. Young people must make room to appreciate what has come before, or what the older generation has done. The older generation must make room to listen to the new narratives, you know, young people must acknowledge that work has happened. One of the reasons why we made the film was that they need to know what has come before, so they know how, which battles to fight, you know. Because if you don't know what has been done before, you may be fighting, it's like you're in quicksand in the deserts, and you're just sinking, and you're really not doing the work. But if you know the strategy of getting into the quicksand, you might know how to get out, you know. So one very important thing is to acknowledge what has been done before, know about it, and then decide which of the fights you're going to go for. Because beyond everything today too is climate change fights, you know, and how that has also come to affect women largely. Because for women who have depended on the forest for livelihoods, their lives have changed. The women who live by the sea and dependent on the sea for livelihood, they've lost their livelihood as well, you know. All because of situations of climate change, of which these women did not even cause, you know, and it's coming from somewhere and they are dealing with the brunt of it. So all of this matter. Recently in Germany, here in Freiburg, I saw there was a march, there was a protest 2 weeks ago or something like that, and I found it impressive. What I found impressive about the march was that it had different activists. So I saw different posters. I saw queer people, I saw the pride posters, you know, and the slogans, and I saw people marching for, protesting for the environment, the people who were protesting for the government, for politics, because the elections was about to happen, and you know that conversation that came up about migrants and things like that, and there was a big rally in Berlin. And I was in Berlin at that time when that demonstration happened. And so I found different people with different placards saying different things. But at the end, it was all back to people and activism and human and rights in different forms, you know. So if that was possible, then anything else is possible. Because normally you'd have had a march that was just about climate change. You've had a march that's protesting against the government and policies, etc. Then you have a different march, pride, you have a different... But this one was consolidated. And I think that if we can begin to do that, we'll make headway.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I finished my questions. I don't know if you want to say anything else. I didn't ask you what is important to you. You have the chance to do so.
Yeah, like I keep saying, women's narratives are very important to me. Mm-hmm. Women's work, women's histories are very, very important to me. Hence why I do a lot of work in the field of women, you know. So, and I'm a filmmaker, and at the core of everything, I'm a filmmaker. And I know how tough it is for women to be filmmakers, and also how most women filmmakers work for themselves, you know. Do a lot of freelance. Those who are documentary filmmakers, feature film, they have independent, they do a lot of independent work, and that's challenging, you know. Mm. Especially when it comes to funding, and also it's a battlefield, because even the free world, the supposed free world of called the USA, if you look at even just the Academy Awards, when it comes to directing a certain things, the first time a woman was winning Best Picture was not too long ago. And the Oscars has been around for how many years? Forever. You find out that as a film educator, there's something I found out, that when you're reading the film history books, it's as if women were never part of the early years of filmmaking. But there were. Some started making films even before the big names like D.W. Griffith and co. came up. But they're mute, you know? And so for me, women's narratives are very important to me, whichever form, you know, either in film, outside, whatever it is. But I think that women's stories must be told. And the more we tell it, we legitimize their work and their presence. Yeah. Mm.
Do you already work on a new project?
So for now, I'm bidding for a project. So I've submitted the proposal.
What is it about?
I don't know if I can say it because I haven't been called yet.
Okay.
You know, but it's also about women in the sector of the extractive sector, oil, gold mining,
okay.
cocoa, you know.
Oh,
yeah, so that's, somebody wants to do a certain work on them and they are now proposing. But for me, my most important things are the festival that I run, you know. So this year, I'm again trying to work with the Goethe Institute in Accra to organize another version of the Women's Film Festival, you know. And then also working towards a women's network, you know. And I also work for the Forum for African Women Educationalists, which is a Pan-African women's organization set up in the 90s by 5 women ministers of education. There are many chapters. Some chapters have collapsed, but the Ghana chapter still works. And we're currently doing some work with MasterCard, you know. And I am the secretary and the treasurer. So I've always been around women's work. I won't stop doing it. It is important to me. And I have a daughter. So, yeah, I owe her that. Yeah.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, and I wish you all the best
thank
for
you
your plans,
much.
And thank you for your time.